and gentlemen, I'm Joe Dighton.
And I'm Mike Grant.
And you're listening to the GD Podcast, an informal but insightful conversation about sports, pop culture, beer, and the like. Follow us on Twitter at the GD Podcast, or you can email us at the GD Podcast at gmail.com. Today, Mike and I take a look at what's going on so far in March Madness. We'll take a look at the NHL playoff push, react to some of the free agent signings in the NFL offseason, talk a little True Detective in a pop culture corner, and then Mike will bring us home with Mike's Beer Blast. Mike, how you doing, man?
Good, man. It's been a while this time, but I'm glad to be back talking to you about love, life, and sports.
Yeah, man, it's good stuff. This is we're at like the prime time for sports, I would say, because you know after the Super Bowl it's kind of dead.
Yeah.
And then you get March Madness, then the Masters, and then baseball starts, and it's like and NHL playoffs, and it just seems like this is like a really good time to get back in the swing of things.
Yeah, man. There's golf. I think the Memorial Tournament's today. I love me some golf. Looks like Tiger. I'm not sure if he's going to play the Masters or not.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He didn't play this weekend in the tournament. He's got a bulged or herniated disc. So.
Oh, that's right.
The Arm Palmer Invitational was this weekend. He pulled out of that. So I hope he can rest up enough and be able to play in the Masters, but his back's been messing him up.
That's right. I had the last one he was playing, and he had to pull out of early too. I forgot about that.
Yep.
Yeah, that would be a bummer. It's not the same, I think, you know, especially a major tournament without him. That would be a shame.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're smack dab in the middle of everything right now. And you know, this weekend, you know, March Madness kicked off, and I guess madness is the right word. It's a lot of, higher seeds are moving on, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. I think in the first round, you had 8 upsets, and then even like last night, you had Dayton winning again.
Yeah.
Which is pretty wild. And Harvard almost knocked off Michigan State last night, but they held on. So it's been a wild couple of days, and I feel like these last few years, upsets are becoming some of the norm, and I'm trying to figure out like what the heck, like why, what's like the formula that leads to these upsets. I don't know if you had any thoughts on why these smaller schools are able to do this early in the tournament nowadays.
I think we wanted to talk about this before, but you know, now that kids can leave, when can they leave for the NBA?
They only have to stay 1 year. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it might just be a product of that. You know, all the top elite talent leaves as soon as possible. And then you're left with kind of like a true college system, which is nice. You know, I think the March Madness tournament basketball wise is the best thing out there. I'm not a big fan of really the NBA at all. It used to be back in the day.
Yeah.
But I mean, that would be my guess, but I'm not a huge basketball guy, so I'm not going to say that I'm the expert.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're onto something there too, because I thought about it, like, I saw on Friday, you saw Duke got knocked out by Mercer.
Yep.
And I was like, whoa. But then when I heard people kind of analyze the game, and I looked at it to myself, and Mercer started, I think, four or five seniors.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Duke, their starting lineup, I think, was like freshmen and sophomores and maybe one senior.
Yeah. So they got that much more chemistry and been playing together a lot longer. And I think that helps out a lot.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to also, just because I think, you know, Duke's got the brand name. Same with Kansas lost. They lost today to Stanford. You think, you know, Kansas, big basketball power, but they lost to Stanford, which isn't known for its hoops. And I think, at least these days, the tournament, I think you can almost take off, like the brand name is almost leveled off by teams that play together, like that with kids who are on the team for 3 and 4 years together.
Absolutely. You know, maybe that's why Ohio State lost too.
Yep.
And then we got this Stephen F. Austin. I never even heard of them before.
Yeah, they beat VCU over. And yeah, that was crazy too. I mean, I watched the end of that game. That was just ridiculous. Because I know VCU was up by 4 with a few seconds left, and they fouled it, and they fouled a kid taking a 3-pointer. Like, there's no reason to do that. You know, you're up by 4. Even if he makes it, they're down 1, and they'll probably foul you. You know, that was, I don't know.
If he doesn't foul them, they win the game.
Yeah. I was shocked that they weren't told just to like back off, because there's no reason to, because I saw the press conference, because the guy was trying to just contest the shot, and there's no reason to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they're up by three, I would have understood it, but yeah, I was surprised by that. So yeah, but I think you're right. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that some of the bigger programs, kids don't stay around, and they're talking about it after the Mercer Duke game that a lot of times kids will go to like a school like Mercer where they can play right away. Whereas if you go to a Duke or something, you know, you have to wait a couple of years. So some kids want to play as soon as they get to college. So mid-major like that's more appealing.
Yeah.
And then Stanford lost today, or not Stanford, excuse me, Kansas lost to Stanford. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Kansas, I think this is like exhibit A of the whole thing. Their two top players are both freshmen.
Yeah.
And I think when you're relying on freshmen, you know, if they're not playing well, you're in big trouble, I think.
Yeah. You know, I think it also goes to say that, you know, if you're a D1 player, you're pretty good and you can find elite talent, you know, no matter what team you play on. And this, you even look at the NFL and college football too, you know, some of the greatest players in the NFL ever came from really small college towns.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's not necessarily that you have to pay for the Dukes, you know, the Dukes and the Kansases of the world to be great.
Yeah, exactly. If you're good enough, no matter, almost like you said, no matter where you go to school, if you're good enough, people will find you.
Yeah.
So yeah, when I was watching the Kansas game this afternoon, and I'm just thinking, man, you know, these are, you know, they're relying on two freshmen to try to carry them, and that can just be problematic. And yeah. And after the game, I know Charles Barkley was talking about this. He was saying that, you know, and you kind of mentioned NBA yourself, you liked it better back in the day, and Barkley was saying he thinks that NBA is kind of the worst he's ever seen it, because a lot of these kids are coming out of school too soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it goes to show, you know, that explains the tournament and maybe explains a little bit why the NBA, I mean, you have your outliers like the LeBrons and Kobe Bryants and Michael Jordans of the world. But, you know, those are rare people. The majority of kids need a lot more time to develop before they go to the NBA.
Yeah, and Barkley mentioned that too, because when people say, oh, these kids are coming out too soon, people are too quick to jump on LeBron and Kobe. But like you said, and he said the same thing, these are exceptions to the rule. Mm-hmm. Most of these kids could benefit from staying in, you know, 2 years, because, I mean, you're playing basically, these kids are playing 30 years or 30 games in college and jumping right to playing against the best players in the world. It doesn't add up a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why I think there's something to the, you know, the NFL forcing, you know, you got to play say 3 years in college, I think, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so I think there's something to be said about that. So, I think it just levels the playing field nowadays that, you know, the mid-majors can keep kids. I think Mercer, I saw that, like, their starting lineup had played, like, 103 games together.
Yeah, you know, and that's obviously showing that it helps out a lot against competition when you have that chemistry together.
Yep, so I think chemistry, if you have the chemistry versus a talented team or talented program, all of a sudden, it's a much more even match, which that proved to be. So, yeah, so it's definitely an exciting first couple of days. But that kind of led me, I was thinking about this, because speaking of the Duke-Mercer game, as Duke's, you know, their season was going down in flames, I was on Twitter, and, there was just like this, it's the same every year when Duke's going down. It's like this kind of big, you know, it's like, you know, this big hoopla. It made me wonder, like, why are certain teams, you know, obviously their rivals UNC, so you could see UNC fans being happy, but it spreads further than that. So I feel like there's like a Mount Rushmore of teams that are like universally hated. I think it's like Duke, the Lakers, the Cowboys, and the Yankees.
Yeah.
And do you think it's just a matter of teams like that? Do you think it's just that because they win a lot, do you think there's something else to it? Why, you know, people universally hate these kind of teams?
Yeah, man, I think it's just they win a lot. And then, you know, I think inevitably most of the teams, when they're at the height of their peaks of winning, you know, you'll get some Michael Irvin-type characters, characters that are a little cocky and,
yeah,
you know, like the showboat. And then you start associating that with the team, being in the limelight. And I think it just kind of all waterfalls into eventually just turning in some hatred for the team. I mean, everybody gets jealous of the winners. And then, you know, if you were cheering for them in the beginning, you're, of course, jumping on the bandwagon. You're not a true fan. So,
yeah.
I mean, even the Patriots. I thought Patriots were, like, one of the only teams in their recent memory that at first when they won, you know, they're like, ah, it's okay that the Patriots won because they're like a good team and
yes,
they got good guys and they win the right way. But, you know, they kept on being good and now everybody hates the Patriots and everyone hates Bill Belichick and he's a mean old grumpy man.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I think between, you know, Belichick, he's not the most, at least in front of the camera, he's not the nicest guy. Spygate didn't help their case either, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's true. You're right. When they won that, when they beat my Rams that first Super Bowl, they seemed like they're kind of like a likable group of guys, but it kind of just went from, like, you know, Jets and Dolphins fans hating them from, to everybody. So that was interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, yeah, same with the Lakers. I think you're right. I think just kind of like that, because you would think it would just be like kind of the Celtics, you know, that rivalry, they'd hate them, but it seems like the Lakers are universally hated.
Yeah.
Maybe it's that stigma, like you said, you know, the Showtime Lakers with Magic and Kareem. It just kind of stuck. You know, and on Thursday, I was at the place, this place with my buddy watching the games, and one of the TVs before the next round of games, they're showing like this Duke special, like the 91-92 teams with Gleitner and Bobby Hurley and those guys. And my friend was saying, he goes, you know, it's funny, like Duke, people still hate him, but it probably ties back to that dynasty. You know, that's why, and ever since then, everyone's just hated Duke ever since, even though it, you know, even though those guys are so far removed from the team now, it doesn't matter. People just think of Leitner and Hurley and Grant Hill, and they hate Duke no matter who's on the team now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then with my poor Yankees, it's funny, you know, not my poor, but yeah, it's funny, you know, everyone loves to see the Yankees lose, and it's like, what, you know, I never really got that, but I guess it goes to the same thing when especially with the Yankees, because the way Steinbrenner would spend money and stuff, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just the ridiculous amount of money they spend. They win all the time. You know, I think a lot of people feel like it's an unfair advantage that, you know, they have so much money to spend and other teams that aren't in as big of markets, you know, just they can't afford to keep up with the Yankees. So,
yeah,
it's kind of an unfair advantage, and that I'm sure causes some bitterness and is, you know, grown exponentially over time.
Yes, yeah. And my last thought on Duke, it was funny. I was at Buffalo Wild Wings watching their game against Mercer, and like the whole place was cheering as Mercer was winning. Except I noticed this one guy kept like putting his head in his hands. Yeah. I said, "This guy's either a Duke fan or he has Duke going all the way in his bracket." So there's no other reason to be rooting, to be upset that Duke's losing, other than those two reasons.
Yeah. Exactly. Did you fill out a bracket yourself?
I did one on for the Buffett's $1 billion challenge.
Yeah.
And I was knocked out at 2:30 on Thursday, you know.
Yeah, I did one too, and it was bad.
Yeah, because I think because once I had Ohio State beating Dayton, so once Dayton won that game, that was it for me.
Have you checked the $1 billion bracket? Is there anybody still alive?
No, I don't think anyone made it. I don't think anyone got past Friday, I think.
Yeah, I think the Stephen F. Austins of the world kind of threw everybody off.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that that was a big one. I think who else? I think Harvard winning, beating Cincinnati probably hurt some people too.
Yeah, North Dakota State.
Yep.
Yeah, the rest of them seem okay. And then, like we already talked about, the Mercer game.
Yeah. That's what I think when if this came out, I think that what makes it so tough to do a perfect bracket is that you know there's going to be upsets, but the key is, can you pick the right ones? Which games are going to be the upsets? That's the tough part.
Yeah.
Because you know they're somewhere, but unless you really, really study these teams, you know, like looking back, if I had really studied, I might have thought twice about, you know, I still would have probably picked Duke anyway, but I would have Duke is going to win this game. But then if I look deeper, I'm going to be like, you know.
Yeah,
when you see how experienced Mercer is, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I always do one on ESPN.com that kind of keeps track of the points for you and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I forgot I picked Kansas to go to the Final Four, so that one is off the table. But I think I picked Michigan State to win the whole thing in that, so we'll see. And they almost lost to Harvard last night.
Yeah.
I have a buddy.
Pulling away at the end there.
They did. I think those games like that, once, you know, sometimes the talent just takes over.
Yeah.
Like the underdog can hang in for a little bit, but then after that, it's kind of like, you know, Michigan State kind of found its way, and that was that. So they'll play the winner of Virginia and Memphis. So that should be, yeah, I'd be interested if, I assume Virginia's going to win, but you never know in this tournament, so.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like I said, we were talking about it before we came on, is be interested if, you know, Wichita State can, you know, beat Kentucky, and then see if they can actually go all the way and go undefeated. That, you know, that'd be interesting.
That would be wild.
And you just don't think of, you know, a school like that. I mean, I know they made it to the Final Four last year, but you just don't think, you know, if you think a team's going to go undefeated, you think Kansas, Duke, UNC, something like that.
Yeah, not Wichita State.
Yeah, so I'll be pulling for them. I think that will be that'll be fun. And then we, as we get down to the nitty gritty, speaking of like brackets and playoff tournaments and stuff, we are what 10, 12 games away from the NHL playoffs.
We are, man, and it's starting to get nervous.
Yeah, I saw the Caps. I that game was on too late. I went to bed, but I saw they came back and won in a shootout, I think.
They won in a shootout. I mean, since it was last Sunday, they started kind of their West Coast tour, and they played Toronto at home and then went out on the West Coast. They've won every game except for one. I think they lost to LA, but that was an overtime too, so they still got a point
out of it, yeah.
So they've been doing what they need to do.
Yeah,
they've won the last like 3 out of 4 games. So yep. They just need to keep on doing that. But it's tough. I mean, of course, it always comes down to the end with the Caps. That's just what they like to do, it seems like. But the schedule is not easy. They got the Blackhawks in there. They got to play Dallas. They got to play the Bruins. They got to play the Kings again. But beating the Sharks was pretty good.
Yes. Yeah. Because I think I went to bed right after the Sharks went up 2-1. I was getting ready to go to bed and I saw this. Oh, they won in the shootout. So that's good stuff. But yeah, when I saw that on their schedule, that West Coast swing with, you know, Ducks, Kings, Sharks, I was like, man, that's, you know, and the fact that they were able to take 2 out of 3 out is really impressive.
Yeah. I mean, they got destroyed by the Penguins back to back, but then they beat the Canucks, which they should have. Beat the Toronto Maple Leafs, beat the Ducks, lost to the Kings in overtime, and then just beat the Sharks. So we'll see what happens, but the rest of their schedule is not easy. And though I think they'll be there into the bitter end, like usual.
Oh yeah, yeah, I would think so too.
I think they're tied for the last spot in the wild card with Detroit right now.
Yes. Yep. They are. They are. Yeah. They're tied in points, but I think Detroit's just ahead of them because they play less games.
Yeah. So we will see what happens. It'll be a fight to the finish like usual.
Yeah. It's definitely exciting. I think just the whole East itself will be a, you know, fight. Like I said, it's like Boston and Pittsburgh and then everybody else kind of.
Yeah, and I mean, who's to say if your boys go on a losing streak, we could be right in the thick of things for the third spot in the division too. But that's going to be kind of tough to do right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're only 3 points out, and yeah, the Rangers hadn't been playing well. They've won 3 in a row now, but before that they were kind of struggling a little bit. I don't know if it was the St. Louis trade, kind of trying to get him accustomed to things. But today kind of hit a tough patch, and I think it's just a season, I think, is that it's tough to stay hot all for 82 games.
Yep, hitting the end of it. It's just part of the grind right now. How does it feel to watch St. Louis and the Rangers blue?
Oh, it's crazy, man. It's really bizarre. He's a good player. Still hasn't scored yet, though, which is kind of wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, he almost scored last night, an empty netter against the Devils, but one of the Devils, like, dove in front of him and blocked the shot with a stick. Like, I'm like, his first goal as a Ranger shouldn't be an empty netter anyway, you know? It shouldn't.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's been weird to see him. But, yeah, I think he's definitely set up some nice goals and things like that. So I think he's going to, you know, play a big part if they're going to hold on and make the playoffs. But, yeah, they got some tough games. They got Philly again, who looked, to start the season, Philly looked, DOA.
Yep.
But then they fired their coach after 3 games, which I thought was a panic move, but it seemed to be the right move because they've been playing so much better since then.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's like we thought once they realigned these divisions, we were in for a tough haul with the Penguins and the, you know, Flyers and everyone else. So, yeah, we are, like I said, down the last, you know, dozen games or so. I know the Rangers got the Coyotes tomorrow, and then they're hosting Philly on Wednesday. So that'll be a big game.
Yeah, that'll be a huge game. Yeah.
Speaking of the Eastern Conference, like I said, it looks like it's Pittsburgh, Boston, everybody else. If somehow Pittsburgh or Boston isn't representing the East in the finals, who in the East do you think would be that team that could get there if it wasn't one of those two?
You know, you look at the rest, and it's just kind of a wash.
Exactly. Yep.
They're all kind of right there. So, I mean, I pick a team that is playing hot right now. I really haven't seen the Canadiens, but every time I watch the Flyers, they look pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You never can count the Red Wings out. But I think it'll really boil down to watching, you know, the last segment of these games of the season to see who's the hottest going in, and I'd probably pick them.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Yeah, a lot of times it's like football; it's the same way. If you look at a lot of times, you look at who won the Super Bowl. If you look at their last four or five games, they usually won most of them.
Hey man, I'm gonna say the Capitals somehow pull off a playoff spot and they go to the Cup. That's my guess.
I like that. You know, it's funny what you're taking a flyer on that, but yeah. If they can put their talent together, there's no reason they couldn't make a deep run into the playoffs.
Yeah, their defense is just a little suspect, but man, if the whole, I was watching a game with my buddy, and we were talking about if the whole team could play with the passion and heart that the Ward line has.
Yeah,
they'd be amazing, man. But it just seems like all the other lines, especially the top line, Ovi and them, they seem like they don't play with as much energy as Fair, Ward, and Chimera do.
Yeah, I feel like they, like those guys, the top lines, they play with that passion, like when it's necessary, like when they're down a goal or something, where they're like the grinder lines, say every shift they're playing like that.
Yeah, and you need that, and that's what makes a great hockey team. And I think that's been probably the Achilles heel of the Caps for, you know, the last 5, 6, 7 years now is, you know, they have so much talent. A lot of times I think mentally they're like, oh, well, we're talented enough. We don't have to work as hard. But it goes to show, you know, the guys in the third or fourth line supposedly don't have as much talent, but I know plus minus is kind of like a gray area when it comes to stats.
Yep.
But I think it is telling that the only line on the Caps that has a positive plus minus is the Fair Ward Chimera line.
Yeah. They play hard on both ends. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think it's fine with the Caps. I think at times with them, like you said, they have the talent. It's can they overcome that mental hump at times?
Always has been, man. So, yeah, why not this year? You know, then no one expects anything from them. And these are the types of years where, you know, sleeper pick can actually win and go to the Cup. So, Caps are my sleeper pick. It's going to happen this year.
Okay. All right. I like it. I like the confidence. Yeah. I thought about asking that because I was looking at the standings. I'm like, man, who was like the third team in this conference after, you know, Boston and Pittsburgh? And I guess as much as I hate to say it, if I had to pick right now, I'd probably go Philly. Just where they're playing right now. But it's really, like I said, it's really a mixed bag with the rest of the conference. Everyone else is kind of playing about the same, and it's pretty even.
Yeah, the Flyers have been playing great of late, so I wouldn't be surprised if they went deep too.
Yeah, so we'll see how these last dozen or so games, you know, pan out. But, I'll be watching each and every one.
Yep.
So we shall see. Then we got a little, it's funny to think it's March, but football's become like coming almost close to being a year-round sport.
Yeah, I know. It's unbelievable how they just promote it.
Yeah, they're pretty smart how they kind of, after the Super Bowl, they kind of, you know, the combine's not too far away. And then the draft, you know, so they free agency, they kind of keep some kind of storyline going to keep themselves, you know, in the sports talk universe almost all year round.
It is the draft.
The draft is actually, is it come up, is it next month? Or am I confusing that with that draft day movie? I thought it was next month.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I thought that's coming up. So that's got some interesting implications as well. Because I was just looking at, I was trying to remember the draft order, and I was thinking about, I haven't heard much else about what the Rams are going to do with that second pick.
Yeah.
I was like, actually, it's May 8th through 10th. That's what, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was thinking about, because I've been seeing promos for that draft day movie with Kevin Costner and Jennifer Garner. That comes out in April, but the movie's the following month. So, but yeah, like we were talking before we got on the air here, is that, yeah, our teams, you know, Rams and Skins haven't done a ton as far as getting outside help. How have you felt about that with the Skins? Would you like to see them kind of be a little more aggressive, or do you think they're kind of just waiting and seeing? Are you okay with that kind of approach?
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, the Redskins' normal move is to spend a crap ton of money.
Yeah, that's true.
And splashes, but I'm kind of a little frustrated because it seems like, you know, this is the one year where they actually do need to sign some big-name talent to help them out in the backfield, but they're doing nothing. So, I mean, we'll see if it pans off for them. They signed some veteran players. They got D'Angelo Hall back for pretty cheap.
Yeah.
I think they got Perry Riley, Brandon Merriweather, if he can. You know, he's a crazy, ferocious player, but he gets hurt all the time. So we'll see if he can stay healthy. But, yeah, it's a little bit frustrating to see them in years past make all of these huge moves, and a lot of times when they make these huge moves, they'll do, you know, like a Haynesworth type move.
Yep.
That kind of boggles your mind. And now the one time, you know, they've been on that cap restriction for the last couple of years, they got the cap penalty, and now they finally have some time to spend some money to get some players that actually make sense to help out the team, and now they're doing nothing. So that's typical Redskins factor for me.
Yeah.
That's, you know, something used to, they're doing the opposite of what, you know, you think the logical thing would be. So we'll see what happens. I've been dealing with this crap for 20 years, and each year they never cease to amaze me, man.
I know, it is pretty wild. You think of, you're right. You think about all the money they've spent on, you know, they spend like drunken sailors every offseason. This year they're kind of, yeah, been playing it close to that. So it's definitely a different change of pace. Yeah, and the Rams have been kind of quiet too as far as free agency, which, you know, I guess I'd rather them do nothing than make a bad signing. I just,
sorry about that.
I'm sorry. No, I think I'd rather them, like I said, I'd rather them do nothing than make a bad signing. But I know there's holes to fill, so I don't know if they're looking to do that more so in the draft than free agency. It's a lot cheaper to do it through the draft if you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why, because I think my buddies, the Jets fans, like the Jets have 12 draft picks. That's huge. I mean, if you can rebuild your team through the draft, you know, you can really help yourself out salary cap wise. So,
yeah, I haven't really analyzed the draft yet of what I know. I think it's a pretty wide receiver heavy draft. There's a lot of great wide receivers, but I don't know any other positions that stand out.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I know there's some decent quarterbacks coming out too. And I don't know if you saw that the Texans traded Schaub the other day to the Raiders.
Yeah.
See, with that, do you think that means they're probably going to be looking at one of the, because I got the first pick. Do you think they're going to probably go quarterback route?
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
It seems like if you're going to unload what was your franchise quarterback,
yeah,
you're looking for a new person to take the helm and hopefully change the future of the franchise.
Yeah. I want to say it was Merrill Hodge said, I think it was him, said that he thinks Manziel has bust written all over him, especially if he's in the first round. I mean, what you know, do you think bust is too strong of a word as far as Johnny Football?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just, most of those quarterbacks don't pan out, and he's just another one of kind of those run-and-gun type quarterbacks, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about him to know if he can develop into, like, a great pocket passer.
Yeah.
As much as you want to convince yourself that a dual threat quarterback is your answer, it's not in the NFL, and it's been proven time and time again.
Yeah, I agree. I guess I don't know if bust is the right word, but he's not a sure thing like I thought Luck was.
Yeah, I don't think he might. Yeah, I think you're right on that. So, you know, bust might not be the right word, but definitely not a sure thing. And I hated him after last year of how cocky he was. So.
Yes, yeah.
He really just put a bad taste in my mouth, and I really don't like him that much at all. So, looks like the Bridgewater kid from Louisville.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's close to the top pick.
Yeah,
he's supposed to be pretty good. So I don't know. We'll see.
I'm curious to see what they do. Yeah, that, you know, I, like you said, I think they'll probably, they're looking at quarterbacks, and they traded Schaub. I haven't heard much about what the Rams are going to do with the second pick. Because, you know, like I said, I was talking to a friend of mine about this because I don't know if they're going to use it themselves. Because the year they had it when they traded the Redskins, you know, I don't know if there's a team that's as desperate to move up this year as the Redskins were that year.
Yeah.
Because they were able to get, like, they got a King's Ransom for that pick that year. But this year, I just don't know if there's a, you know, that urgency to, oh, man, I really want to move up. But we'll see. And also,
yeah. I mean, this year is, this year we'll truly figure out if that RG3 trade was worth it. You know, him being hurt last year.
Yes, didn't really, yeah.
It's kind of a bit of a wash. After the first year, you say absolutely yes.
Yes.
You know, you have one of the best rookie seasons of any quarterback in the history of the NFL.
They made the playoffs, yep.
Turned the playoffs from, you know, a three-win team to a playoff team. Now that they went back to a three-win team. So him being 100% healthy, seeing how he can develop over the last couple of years and what he's learned. It seems like, you know, the coaching regimen, the disagreements between the Shanahans, that's all gone. You got a fresh, clean slate.
I think that's going to be good for them.
Yeah, younger guy that is a QB guy, too, that helped, you know, helped develop Dalton, younger guy, into a pretty good, okay, QB. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's... It was just so much turmoil in that locker room last year. I think they just needed, like, they did the right thing, just clearing it out. Let's just start over and see how things go. I think that's I know some people were kind of fighting Shanahan to get one more year without the salary cap restrictions, but I think there was just so much said and just so much just angst. I just thought that it was time for a reboot.
Yep.
Yeah. One of the early moves that kind of surprised me was that the Cowboys let DeMarcus Ware go.
Yeah.
But
Denver is so stacked right now; it's not even.
Funny. It's ridiculous. Yeah, I think after the Super Bowl, they realized we need to shore up this defense, so they just went ahead and they did that. Because yeah, I mean, the Cowboys usually Jerry Jones is not as financially responsible in that sense, but I think as much as it stunk to let him go, they just knew that cap wise, they just couldn't afford his. I think it was like he'd been paid $12 million, so they said, you know, he wasn't willing to restructure, which. That's where it's right. If he doesn't want to, you know, it's his right not to have to redo his contract.
Yeah.
So I was just surprised that the Cowboys did the responsible thing for once, even though it's one of their best defensive players.
Yeah, it's crazy. And he's an amazing player, too.
Yeah, but like I said, it's just the tough business of the sport. So that surprised me. And I was also partially surprised that the Jets signed Vic, just because they had Geno Smith for 1 year, and I feel like they're bringing in someone else. I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be open competition, but it just seems like after 1 year, it seemed like it was like, wow, they're really not sure. It doesn't show a lot of faith that you're bringing in competition for him after one season, I guess.
Yeah. Geno Smith won, but he's got an ugly throwing mechanic, too.
And he just needs a lot of
time to develop. So, I mean, maybe it's just more of an insurance policy. If he isn't the real deal and falls apart, at least you have somebody that might be able to salvage your season.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think also the thinking is that with a true threat, that'll kind of maybe force Geno to elevate his game a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't think he really had that last year. So, and then I'm curious to see what happens with Mark Sanchez, since they obviously let him go. So,
yeah, that'll be interesting.
I thought he was. They moved up to get him. When they drafted him, they, you know, and then to see things go so far south.
Yeah.
And I almost forget with the Jets that Sanchez got hurt. Like they put him in the fourth quarter of a preseason game. That's when he got hurt.
Yeah, that's how it started all the controversy.
Yeah, because he should never have probably been out there, but they wanted to win. Because they were playing the Giants, I think, in their preseason. They wanted to win a preseason game, so they put him back out in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. And he hurt his shoulder. That was that. So I'm sure he's got to be a little bit bitter.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, yeah, so.
NFL goes, though, man.
It really does. One bump, one hit, and you are, you know. And like I said, it's interesting with football, too, is that they can – it's the one sport where the contracts aren't guaranteed. So you can – I mean, it does give them teams more flexibility. You can cut somebody tomorrow, you know, and
– Yeah.
Where at other three
Yeah, that's crazy, but NFL being one of the most violent sports, you would think that they would get paid enough, paid the most.
Yeah.
I mean, heck, man, if I had my choice, I'd be a baseball player any day of the week.
Yeah, I agree. Even though it's a more grueling as far as length, but just as far as, you know, you can play a lot longer.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. Because, yeah, football is probably, the last sport I'd pick would be football, I think.
Absolutely.
So I can understand why the contracts aren't guaranteed. And it keeps the power with the league, I think, with the teams.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember I saw this crazy stat that, like, the first couple weeks of free agency, the amount of money given out was, like, $238 million, whereas Robinson Cano signed the Mariners for $240 million himself.
Oh, man. That's insane.
Yeah, it just goes to show you how crazy the money is from sport to sport.
Yep.
So it's been a crazy couple of weeks. I think it'll probably slow down a little bit free agency-wise in football, but I'm sure once it gets closer to the draft day, we'll see more deals being made.
Yeah.
So that'll be good. Like you said, we didn't talk in a while, so we didn't got a chance to give our final thoughts about True Detective.
I think that goes, if it was a full-blown show, it might have, depending on how it went, is like Breaking Bad material. Breaking Bad, I think, moved to my number one seed as show-wise, is one of the best shows ever.
Yeah.
But for a one-and-done type season, True Detective is, you know, I mean, it doesn't have much competition. I think the biggest one I could think of is American Horror Story.
As for that format, yeah.
Yeah, similar format. But it was epic. I mean, the writing was incredible. The show was just fascinating. Woody and McConaughey, I don't think you could have picked a better cast, all-star cast to run that show. And I think, you know, by most shows, it started slow the first two or three episodes, just kind of building the story and the characters. But about from the fourth episode on, the police siege scene, from there on, I mean, just all hell broke loose in every episode. I wanted to watch the next one immediately. And it was very painful to have to wait a week for the next episode. I almost wish I would have just, you know, saved it till the season was over, heard all the hype, and be able to pump it out in a weekend.
Yeah, it was only 8 episodes, so you could have definitely done that. Yep.
Yeah, but it was fantastic.
I agree. I thought it was just really good, you know, start to finish. You said the writing was fantastic, and they hit home runs with both of the lead roles, too. I thought that helped. You know, I mean, you can have a well-written show, but if it's not acted well, it kind of takes away from it.
Oh, absolutely.
So they hit, like I said, they, you know, because I know Matthew McConaughey will get most of the accolades for his role, but Woody Harrelson, I thought, was just as good.
Yeah, he hit it perfectly.
I mean, like, he had to play his role a little bit different. I mean, McConaughey got to play like kind of like the out there kind of guy, so that, you know, draws more attention, but I thought, yeah, Woody Harrelson's performance was just as fantastic. And, yeah, I agree with you. As far as, like, a miniseries like that, I'd put it right up there with anything else.
Yeah, I totally would. It was fantastic.
Yeah. And we talked about this, too. It's one of those few mystery-type shows where you let the mystery or the case is, like, secondary to what else is going on. Usually you want it, you're so curious about, oh, who's the Yellow King, but I could have cared less about that. I was just more interested in watching, you know, these two guys kind of verbally spar. I thought that was the much more interesting part of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to see how their personalities and kind of their outlooks on lives evolved throughout the show was pretty fascinating.
Oh, yeah, that was 100% true. So as we look ahead, I'm sure the show will get renewed and move on to season two. And like we said, this is one and done, so they'll probably new cast, new story and stuff like that. Do you have any particular choices as far as who you'd like to see cast or even like the dynamic? Do you like how they had it? Would you like to see them changed up? Maybe have like a guy and a woman, maybe an old vet and a rookie type partnership? Do you have any kind of thoughts on how you like to see them go as far as the leads next season?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, a guy, a girl combo would be nice. But I mean, I would be fine with it being you know, completely different setup and story. But as long as the writing's the same and how they, you know, kind of focused on the characters and made the whole case and the murder mystery kind of secondary throughout the season, would, as long as that happens, I'm happy. Because I thought just the formula of how he wrote it was perfect.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, I'm with you. It's, you know, as long as the characters are just as deep and rich again.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I'd be fine with that too. As long as the quality of the show stays the same. And as far as like, you know, who to pair up, I was like, I feel like they probably have, as long as they're available, they probably have anyone at their disposal. I mean, you figure if,
oh, absolutely. I mean, they can pick from a list of A-list celebrities, anyone that they want. I love Kevin Spacey, but he's doing House of Cards, so that's probably out of the option. Not an option at all.
Yeah, he is good. He's going to House of Cards.
What's the girl, Kate Mara? Was that the girl in the first season?
Yes, yep.
I like her a lot.
Yeah.
Jennifer Lawrence. I wouldn't mind seeing her. Heck, I mean, they could even get a Brad Pitt. I'd love to see DiCaprio. That would be amazing.
That would be fantastic if they went.
Let's get Leonardo, man.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, he would be good.
I would be pissed if they picked Tom Cruise, though. I'm sick of seeing Tom Cruise. I don't like him. Tom Hanks would be amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Leo and Hanks would be probably my top picks.
That would be good. That would be fun. That would be fun. They're great actors. They could do just about anything, I think. So
yeah, it needs to be the guy that can do just about anything and really get passionate about his role, you know. And it's a, you know, not till recently have I realized how, and I really opened up my eyes for Matthew McConaughey and how great of an actor he really is. Because I'm just, you know, I'm used to associating him with the rom-com type movies.
That's where he kind of started out. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you think McConaughey, like, he's not really that real versatile actor that you think of when you think of a Tom Hanks or a Leonardo DiCaprio, but he did it, man. He showed that he can pretty much do anything.
Yeah. He had a really good year this year. He had a really good year. So I'm sure he'll, my guess is he'll win the Emmy for this.
Oh, you have to give it to him. It was incredible.
Yeah, especially if, I don't know, my guess is HBO, they'll probably put this in the miniseries category, not drama.
Yeah.
Which I think if they do that, then there's definitely a shoe-in for him to win.
Yeah, another thing would be interesting to see is HBO kind of tends to, you know, they kind of got a group of actors and actresses that you seem to kind of show up in a lot of their series.
Yep.
And the True Detective like went against the mold with this and didn't really pick any of those. So it'll be interesting to see if they, you know, in this second season, maybe go back and pick someone, that you would see in one of their casts. So that's another interesting angle to see what HBO does. But I mean, picking McConaughey and Woody in the first one leads me to believe that they're going to go outside the box and not kind of go to their default cast of characters that they usually use.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Yeah, I think they kind of set the bar. I'm sure their casting wish list will be just as high since they got those two guys the first season.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm looking. I've been kind of like anxiously. Yeah, I remember you mentioned Brad Pitt. I thought I saw some whispers about that. Maybe that would be interesting.
Yeah, I saw a rumor out there of Brad Pitt, but you know, I'm not a huge Brad Pitt fan. I mean, I'd much rather see a Leo over a Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
I think Leo's a little more versatile than Brad Pitt is.
That's fair. Yeah. I agree with that. I'm almost like, I'm curious to who they pick, but I'm also, like you mentioned too, it's just the dynamic of the whole thing too, like how they decide to pair it up, like if they, even less about who they pick, but like if they decide to go young, old, two women, man, you know what I mean? So I'm almost interested in the dynamic of the pairing as well.
I just saw an interesting article. One of the guys wanted to see Adam from Girls, the boyfriend.
Yeah.
He's an interesting fella. That would be pretty wild to see him as in a big role like that.
That would be. Yeah, that would be. I thought I heard he either is rumored to be in or is going to be in the new Star Wars movie.
Oh, really?
I heard something about that, yeah.
Yeah, I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's good. He's good. Yeah, that season finale for Girls is on tonight, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of stopped watching that. I just lost interest. I don't know why.
Yeah, it was. I've been watching the season, and it's been okay. But I feel like some of it just. I feel like sometimes things don't progress as much as they should on that show.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a bummer, and I know Hannah's the star of the show. I feel at times like the other three cast members just kind of get shortchanged, almost like put in the back burner a little bit. So especially the Jessa and Shoshana characters, I feel like they kind of just pop in now and then, and there's probably more story that could be told there.
Absolutely.
But they do have some good stuff, but I'm looking forward to 2 weeks from now. You got Game of Thrones is back.
Mm-hmm.
Veep is back, I believe. And I don't know if you've seen previews for the new Mike Judge show, the Silicon Valley show.
No.
That looks pretty funny. Yeah, it's just kind of about these guys, I guess they're like computer tech guys. They're trying to start their own company and stuff. So
what's called?
Silicon Valley.
Okay, and that's coming on HBO?
Yeah, I think that's on in 2 weeks as well. Yeah.
Is the like comedy drama thing or just the comedy?
It seems more comedy, I think. From what the previews I've seen, the guy, it's Mike Judge who did like Office Space and Beavis and Butthead and King of the Hill.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that looks pretty funny. So I'm looking forward to I'll definitely check that out. Just the from the promos I've seen, it looks like it would be entertaining. It'd be a good companion show with Veep. So I say April 6th is like a big TV return day, so I'm looking forward to that. And then lastly, I just didn't know if you had any recent beer experiences or any suggestions for the listeners out there.
I've always had beer experiences.
Nice.
I'm just trying to think of some solid beers that I've had of late. Actually, Heavy Seas, and they're from Baltimore.
Okay.
Used to be Clipper City. Now they rebrand themselves Heavy Seas. Been around for a while, but they do. They call it their Mutiny Fleet line of beers, which are the heavy alcohol content beers.
Okay.
There's one called Sierra Noir, which is an American double stout, but it tastes like vanilla and chocolate. It's absolutely delicious. It's going to be harder to find. It comes in a 22. But any of their Mutiny Fleet 22-ounce beers, a lot of them are aged in either bourbon barrels or some type of oak barrel. I have one right now called Dippa that I haven't tried, but it's their double IPA aged in oak barrels. They make a pumpkin one that's aged in bourbon barrels that's delicious. So if you see any Heavy Seas 22 sitting on your shelf, definitely grab them up. It'll say Mutiny Fleet on the label at the bottom. And like I said, that's just their line of beers that have, I think, 8% or 9% ABV and above. So if you see any of those on your shelf, definitely give them a try and let us know if... let us know if they taste good, and they make some pretty good beer. They also do, I'm pretty sure, do free beer brew tours, so if you're ever up in the Baltimore area,
nice.
Look up Heavy Seas and see if there's any tour times available.
That's a good suggestion there. Good stuff, man.
Yes, sir. Yes. So I guess we got, how many more basketball games tonight?
I think we're about halfway through. I think there's 8 games. So this is, so I think there's probably not even halfway through. I guess it's been 2 so far. So yeah, I think 5 games left, 6 games. Yeah.
So we'll watch the end of this Wichita State game and then watch more games tonight and then start the weekly daily grind tomorrow.
Yes, Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Start do it all again on Thursday. So it's this has been some good stuff. But no, it was good to get back on the horn here. It's been a while, so this was good.
Yeah, man. GD podcast coming at you next week.
Yes. So as we always, we appreciate you listening. If you follow us on Twitter, we're at the GD podcast, and you can always email us at the GD podcast at gmail.com. For Mike Grant, I'm Joe Dighton. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time.